I know you came to Scotland as a result of the events of the 30s. Would you like to tell us a little about growing up and what happened to you, which resulted in you coming here to Scotland?
Hungary was an ally of the Nazis. And so until 1944, although there were a number of anti-Jewish laws, you were all right. And then we found out, or I don't know how I found out, later the regent Horthy tried to get Hungary out of the war, either to remain neutral or by joining the Allies. And the Nazis got wind of this, and that's why they occupied Hungary, because nobody could they afford that. By then, by 1944, the things weren't going too well for the Nazis. And so they occupied Hungary on the 15th of March, 1944, and shows you that, for instance, in the Warsaw Ghetto, if you think about it, it took years for people to be sent to Auschwitz or to other of the camps. But in Hungary, from 15th of March, the Germans came in, and by the 17th or 18th of June, I was in Auschwitz. So 3 months and 3 days, you know, the speed of it.
So will you move from your own house into somebody else's house in Hungary?
We had our own house, of course.
Yeah.
It got bombed, so
it's
no longer there.
Once the Nazis took over Hungary, what happened to your family and to yourself?
As I said, the speed at which things were going. 15th of March they came in, the 16th of March you already had to wear the yellow star. And then you had to move to what was called the ghetto. It was the street the gypsies lived in. And so presumably, in other cases, the gypsies moved in. But it so happened that a flat at the very end of the street, which was almost out of the street, so it was dicey whether they would allow us to take it, belonged to my granny's chiropodist. So she moved in to our house, and we moved into one room.
Was that you and your mother and your grandmother?
My parents, my sister, mm-hmm. and my grandmother. My sister is over there, my younger sister.
Five of you in one room.
Yeah.
And then very quickly you were all sent to
Auschwitz. And then we were there perhaps a month, and then we had to move to a disused brick factory beside the railway station. I don't know why they had built these, presumably for transportation beside the railway station, but it was apparently standard practice that the Nazis, and therefore then the Hungarians, put people in there. And there was, of course, no water, and you could take, can't remember, 50 kilograms or whatever, with you. But of course you had to have a sleeping bag because you were lying on the ground and there was no water, of course. And they brought in water every day. And my father was in charge of distributing the water to people. And we were there a very short time. And then we had to line up, and the cattle trucks came up, and I remember writing on it, 7 horses, or I think 90 of us went into one carriage. And you will not believe this, but there was one bucket with water to drink and one for other sanitary purposes. By this time we had to hand in all valuables, even radios and things, but of course nobody, and in everything people like my father too buried things in the garden, which later some of it came out, some of it didn't. Others had been found by others. We were lucky in a way that my father was in charge of the carriage we were in. that nobody went mad there. Some people went mad in the course of the journey, and others committed suicide. So it was one of the worst part of it, because you were still with your family. Mm-hmm. And especially to see your granny in those conditions was really heartbreaking. Then when I never heard of Auschwitz, which is the German name given to it, Auschwitz was the Polish name. When you got on the train, the men had to go one way straight away, and the women and children had to line up, and Dr. Mengele, the Angel of Death, as he was nicknamed, was waiting at the head of the row. I don't know if he attended every selection, but when the Hungarian trains came in, there were two or three transports every day, and the rate of survival in those conditions and not going straight to the gas chamber was
extremely low.
Going forward towards Mengele, I was on the left-hand side, and my sister, who was then, I think, about 11, was beside me, and then my mother and her sister, who was, I think, something like 8 years younger or something than my mother, supporting on either side of my grandmother. And then my younger cousin was the same age as my sister. And then as we were coming up, if my sister had been on my mother's other side, then she would have come with me. But my sister was too young, and Mengele was, by then he was either tired of it all or wanted to hurry. So he didn't say, you, and you, and you. It was, I was handed there on the left. I went one way, and of course I didn't know then, but my mother and my sister, and 90%, I think, of all the others went straight to the gas chambers.
You were young enough to work?
Yes, I suppose so. And well, as they lined us up, and those who Mengele chose for life, I suppose, we went along past barbed wire and people shaven head, jumping up and doing, it seemed, some kind of a weird dance and shouting in Hungarian, I suppose, but it was incomprehensible. And so I said, by then I'd found two of my friends, I said, this must be the lunatic asylum. And but half an hour later, we also had our heads shaved, and they had taken our clothes away, and they sent us to what was showers. And the gas chambers also had showers on them, and they were told that they were going to showers, except that their gas came from the taps, and with us it was water. Then, before we left Auschwitz, they put us into a building, or a large room, I suppose. Well, it had to be quite large to contain 500 of us, called gas chamber. And we went in there, and we had to sit there. There were low sort of seating, all in a circle, and we were by that time in such a confused state of mind that we were making corny jokes about wonder when they turn the taps on and so on. And however, and then I can't remember who, but perhaps it was an SS sergeant or somebody, said that we were going into Western Germany on a long train journey, but if the Red Cross or anybody comes and they ask us about our parents or anything, if anybody says anything that they shouldn't say, they'll be shot. However, we didn't get the Red Cross to us.
And this was after spending some time in Auschwitz?
3 months.
You were 3 months there.
Well,
you didn't work during that period?
No. And then the worst thing was that there was no water. I was in Birkenau, actually, which was for the women, and there was no water. And there was a kind of ditch filled with water by the barbed wire, and you can manage without drink. You know, you can get other drinks. You know, the less there is, the more you want it. So Some people went and drank from it, and they ended up with typhus.
What happened after you arrived and were shaved?
They shaved us all. Then, well, then they sent us to this gas chamber, kind of.
And you washed there?
No showers in that one.
What was a typical day
in
like
Auschwitz?
In Auschwitz, yes?
Sail uphill, which is roll call. At about 4 o'clock, I think, in the morning, a shot came through one of the windows. 500 people, you know, in one side of a barrack is...
Not
doesn't give you a lot of room to lie. Well, you couldn't lie down. You sat on the floor, obviously. There was no beds or anything. And sort of back to back, somebody else and supported each other sitting. And then you had to go out to roll call and you stood, come hail or shine. They counted us and they counted us and they recounted us until I think it tallied every time, but still they
insisted.
How long did it last, roll call?
Well, they were interrupted by getting a drink of brown water, which went for coffee, and a drink of sort of yellow or reddish liquid, which went for soup, but otherwise until about 6 in the evening.
You just stood and they would go round and count you all the time. That would have taken a long time, standing while they just kept counting you.
Oh, absolutely.
You were standing there for the whole day. Did people not collapse from exhaustion? Did not fall down?
You had no names. I was 152.
Go back to where you were before. You were told that you were being sent to Western Germany. What happened then?
They eventually got on a train and arrived in Western Germany in Lippstadt. And we were assigned to work there in an iron and metal works. I don't know if it was a week or 2 weeks. Well, a very short time after we arrived, I was called, or I was carrying something in the factory, and it was a stone floor, and my glasses fell off and broke. So our own camp commandant was a girlhood friend of my mother's. So I went to see her and I said, well, this is what happened. She said, oh, well, you can't go to the factory then. I said, but why not? I said, I'm not blind. And it's a very difficult machine work. That's all I have to do, raise my arm up and down. And she said, oh, but you are as blind as a bat. And you cannot go back. So I didn't. And I went along into the German kitchen every day.
Do you think she did that to help you out of the army munitions?
Did she do it on purpose to make your life easier?
Who?
The camp commandant. Did she do that to make your life easier? Was it an easier life in the kitchen?
I don't know for what reason, or they just needed somebody. It sounds absolutely disgusting now, but whatever the Germans left on their plates, I ate it. You know, we were hungry. I managed to get hold of a pair of overalls and tied them at the ankle. And when I was sent to the stores for, I don't know, anything, I'd pinch a couple of onions and carrots and things and let them go right down to my ankles so that when I had to go back to the camp and they sort of felt me around, they didn't go right down to the ankle, so...
That was brave of you.
Oh, I know. I know.
Did
but
you then
were...
share that with your friends?
Yes, of course. Yeah. Well, I took them to them. And there came a jaundice outbreak, and I had to go into Lippstadt every day with an SS sergeant to collect a big container of some special food. That was for those who had the jaundice. The only trouble was that while they had the jaundice, they couldn't eat. And by the time they were better, they didn't get their special food. So it was a very difficult situation. It was impossible to describe the feeling I had when I went into Lippstadt and I saw buses and trams and women pushing prams. You know, that life had gone on when we were asleep.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Like two parallel lives. One normal life, totally ignoring another section of the population.
Yes. So I had to work in the German kitchen and collected this food for the journeys. And by this time, there was quite a number of them. I also had to sweep the grounds, grab one of the SS officers' room and also a sergeant's room. And he was very kind. He left an apple on the table and pointed to it and he said, "Eat it." And I was afraid that, you know, if I touched it, then I would be bang, bang. But I ate it and nothing happened. So, you know, they weren't all horrible. Most of them were, you know. I mean, I feel no pity for any of the Nazis. When I was leaning in through the window into the jaundice room, talking, and suddenly I felt myself sailing through the air, because one of the Germans came up behind me and kicked me in the backside. Then, just in time for me to catch jaundice, the camp commandant decided that that was too much. There were too many, and he lined us all up, and when it came to me, he pulled my lower eyelid down, and he said, "Day shift." So I was back in the factory, but day shift only.
Were you and your friends not sabotaging the equipment that you were preparing?
Did you try and damage the things that you were making for the Nazis? I remember you said you did.
This was a bit later. First I was with the Italians, the monster of a machine, I can't remember now what it was. First of all, they got their meal in the factory and they took up, instead of two meals, they took up three. And we had a sort of a dark red bowl and people wrote in yellow paint their number on it and mine was 1, 5, 2. The Italians collected one more than they needed, collected three instead of two, and they put it into a bowl, and the Germans sooner or later discovered it. And I was terribly lucky that the bowl with the number on it, one had the food in it and the other covered it, was the one that had my number on it, because he threw that away and took the food away, so he didn't know who it was. So I was lucky that way.
I believe you were finally forced onto a death march. The war drew to a close as the Germans eventually lost the war or were losing the war. Did you remain in Lippstadt or did you have to leave?
In January 45, about 70 people who were ill with various things were sent away by train to, they said, Bergen-Belsen. Didn't mean a thing. And now, at the end of March, or the middle of March, I suppose, a rat poisoning incident and falling asleep when...
Tell Angela about the rat poison.
I told you that camp commandant was a girl, good friend of my mother's, so she expected me to go and see her at least once a week. But by this time, the air raids were absolutely non-stop, practically. So I was on permanent day shift, but my friends were 1 week day shift, 1 week night shift. And when they were on night shift, then they obviously slept during the day. When the air raids came, the Germans were desperate to get to shelter. Even the Polish guest workers and everybody went to the shelter except the Jews. We had to go back to our campus right beside the factory. We had to go back there. They put on the high voltage and ran to the shelter, and that was that. We knew that we were going to be evacuated. So I went to see René, that was the name of the camp commandant, and yet another raid, all the lights out. And as I came out, I said, "I must get back to our room." And coming out of her room, which led on to the biggest room where the bread was distributed, and in the dark I bumped into this cupboard, and as I tried to find my way, the door opened, and there was this big curtain, and it was open. And I put my hand inside, and they sort of felt like small
diamonds,
size of peas, perhaps. And I tasted one, stupid of me, when I could have fell down dead on the spot. But you didn't think of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I tasted it, and immediately I felt raging thirst. So I didn't take any more, but I took it with me. And I sort of made my way back somehow slowly to my room, and I said, anybody hungry? Ask a stupid question. I said, okay, then hold out your hand. And they said, well, what is it? And I said, I don't know, it's some kind of cereal I found in the cupboard outside Renee's room. So in the dark, complete darkness, people held out their hand, and I poured until it was finished. Well, I had very little because, as I say, it made me very thirsty, and another trip down to the end of the corridor where the water was, I just didn't fancy. So when the light came on, we looked at the box and it said rat poison. Heavens, we didn't have a doctor, but there was a nurse in charge. We went along, about 7 or 8 of us, whom I treated so kindly. And the nurse said, well, you only just eaten it, so it will be still in your stomach and digested. So make yourself sick, bring it up, and you'll be okay. So she said, yes, okay. And everybody duly brought back what they had eaten, except 2 people. That was a girl called Bianca, or Blanche, and me. So we tried, we pushed spoons down our throat, but nothing doing. Then, because we were being evacuated and supposed to be walking to Belsen, we sort of forgot about it. And we marched only by night, and during the day they put us into some kind of barn. And the second, I think it was the third day, that we were liberated by the Americans. And this girl, Blanche, said to me then, the Italians, I said, they'd given me a pouch with the lipstick and so on. Well, and I took out the comb and broke it in 2, so each barrack had a half a comb, because we only had this much hair, but it was all the more precious. As I say, we got liberated, and then Blanche said, listen, give me your comb, because I haven't had a comb in my hair for I don't know how long. So I gave her the comb and started brushing, and it was absolutely horrifying.
Did her hair fall out with the rat poison?
It came out, she became completely bald, but not the way we were bald when the Germans shaved us.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very dark girl. I mean, you could tell from when she had the hair completely black, her eyebrows still black, but she was getting absolutely hysterical. Because
the hair was coming out in a comb.
So somebody said there was a cottage hospital a few miles away. So we got hold of a couple of bicycles. Because first of all, Bianca's German wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And also I was the supplier of the evil stuff. So I felt
a responsibility.
So we went along, we cycled along, and they took her and they massaged her head, they gave her cream, and I interpreted. And so after, I don't know, perhaps half an hour or an hour, they came to me, and with a big smile on their face, one of the doctors said, now, I can't tell you what's going to happen, because I don't know if the roots have been destroyed or not. The roots have been destroyed, and she's not going to get
her hair
back. But if they haven't, then she might, but it's going to be a long job. And so it was. It's about 6 months for her to start growing again.
Going back to Auschwitz, you went to a few selections before Mengele when you were at Auschwitz didn't you?
Not a few, perhaps two or three, and then...
Was there not one when you said that you thought you heard your mother's voice when you'd lost your glasses?
I don't know if this happened, probably not every time, but at that particular selection, if you wore glasses, you weren't chosen. You were left behind in Auschwitz. So we were in a row of five, and then the first one got chosen to go, you know, was taken out of the row and made to stand against the barrack. And then the second one was my friend Eva, she's still in Hungary. Then it was Yoli, and then it was me, and a cousin, not of mine, but a cousin of Shoshi's, or an aunt of Shoshi's, who was behind us. She was, well, my mother's age, I suppose. And we were all chosen. Yoli was behind me. He was very, very small and sort of thin. And when the three of us had been chosen, and it came to the row where Yoli was, behind Mengele, we all sort of stuck out our chests. But before that, when it came to my row, I mean, I didn't know that my mother was dead. She had been put to the gas chamber half an hour after we arrived. But I swear to this day, I heard my mother's voice saying, off with those glasses. And I took them off and sort of pushed them with my feet under my, because we had to stand in my birthday suit. And...
That saved your life?
Yeah.
The glasses, you would be selected for the gas chamber?
I don't know for sure.
But that's what
and,
you heard.
And I think Mengele's changed his mind. He was very interested in experiments with twins.
What did you say you did with your food? Cutting it up? How did you manage? Did they give you a square of bread a day in Auschwitz?
Well, we got one slice of bread a day, and that was in the evening, and it was one of those things. I was obsessed by the idea of they want to make animals of us. Well, I'll not let them. So that's why, for instance, one day I'd think in Hungarian, the next day I'd think in German, the next day I'd think in French. I had a number of languages. I had practically no Hebrew. But I had some bread.
So what did you do with your bread to prove you were human?
So what I did was, the way I think in these languages, I'd also decided that one day I used to get the bread and wolf it down.
Most people wolfed it down immediately.
No, not everybody. Somebody you know.
Judith Rosenberg.
How do you know?
You told me before.
What did Judith do?
She cut them up into dainty little squares. So she had her breakfast, she had her three-course lunch, and she had her three-course dinner.
Did you not cut yours into pieces as well? You didn't wolf yours down right away, did you? Did you not break it into pieces? Not as small as Judas, but did you not keep some for later?
I don't know. The thing is, you were risking of it getting stolen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought you normally would break yours up into pieces and have some at one time, some a bit later. You told me that.